This is Boyfar. We have Wami Kilpatrick in the news. Florence Spitzer, record foreclosure. Oklahoma rids itself of illegal. Silverstein once more. Rabbi says hang children from trees. NPD's Udo Voigt charged over pamphlet. Drew Cox to selling defective bombs to Afghanistan. And Bear Stearns liquidated 8 months before collapse. Returning to our top story tonight, Wami Kilpatrick, the mayor of Detroit, is up on charges. The mayor faces 8 felony charges, perjury, conspiracy, obstruction of justice, and misconduct in office, while Beattie faces 7 counts.
A nigger with a diamond in his ear who's running around and having an affair with his chief of staff, and then actually rather like Bill Clinton, using his security to cover up his shenanigans, and then when it gets found out, the city gets sued, and they wind up, you know, they're already bankrupt. Now they have to throw another $8.4 million to pay off these officers. So it's just kind of it's kind of funny if you don't have to live around it, but increasingly as black spread, this kind of junk goes everywhere.
Yeah, it says here the whistleblower's lawsuit was brought by 2 police officers. The 2 police officers say they were unfairly disciplined because they looked into allegations of misconduct by Kilpatrick and his security detail, specifically for investigating claims that the mayor used a security unit to cover up extramarital affairs.
Yeah, part of that aegis involved a big party at the mayor's mansion, and there was some sort of imbroglio or something, and they all ended up at the hospital emergency room, and a white EMS driver said that he'd never seen such commotion. He said that they were all dressed quite well. You can imagine dressed to the nines, these Negroes in Detroit with the earpieces, and he knew that they were the mayor's security people. They came in private SUVs, or I guess it's made to look as if they were private, but they're public vehicles. I mean, they're part of the mayor's fleet, if you will. And the stripper involved, I believe it was a few weeks later, she was shot in a drive-by. I saw the video of that, and her car was hit. It was clearly, looked to me like automatic weapons, and I think that's what they said in the video, if I remember correctly. So she's dead. And the wife appeared, I believe it was the wife, appeared during the party unexpectedly, and she threw a big fit, you see. And there was some sort of knockdown drag-out, and so I think it was the stripper was taken to the hospital. It was a pretty big mess. And that's just part of it. Of course, that's just part of the drama. But in America these days, they love that. As long as they're getting the drama. And as one nigger rapper said, that the white people want to see how we live. To them, it's a big show. And so we have to show them that. And that's what MTV has been doing for years and years now. And that's exactly what they do. I watched a young white girl on live video today. She was featured on live video. You know, they have the new streaming. And she was a good-looking young white girl. And it was nothing but, what was she talking about? She was talking about niggerism. You know, the usual black patois, and she mentioned Kalamazoo, which I found interesting. In fact, I typed in, some of us were just up in Kalamazoo not long ago. And she was talking about, some guy doing cunnilingus and the female pissed in his face. I mean, this is a young girl, what, 19, 20 years old, and featured on live video. So this is the kind of a denigrated America that they've built and is crumbling now. To me, it's very much interrelated to the Kwame thing, because this is a Michigan girl, and they're all over the United States. They're all over MySpace. This is how these kids are. They're like the walking wounded with their mental abilities.
Yeah, they don't know anything other than black standards, and wherever you have blacks and they're being promoted through the Jewish media, it amplifies our actual numbers. So they might only be 13% of the population or even, you know, less. But as in that one song, I don't know who recorded it, you know, they seem like they're 99 because they're shown on TV, and people we know are getting most of their information from TV, and it's not like they're getting any different from the church or from the schools. And so they think that's what normal is. And they don't know any better. I mean, that, as they say, human civilization is only one generation deep. If it's not passed on to the next generation, it's not stuff they know instinctively. And I know a lot of older people have trouble understanding that because they've said to me that, so we always make the point to them, the older you are, the more civilized in America you grew up in, the more you assume that younger people know what's right and know how they ought to act and are departing from it. But in fact, that's not the case. these kids don't know anything different. They didn't grow up in a civilized America. They grew up in America that was a mix of races in which sex puerility, as I call it, was the standard. The nigger has been normalized, and
the norms have been imposed upon them and disoriented and recreated them in the image of Murray Rothstein.
That's absolutely right, and we know that's the number one TV show viewed by young girls and then slightly older ones is Murray Rothstein's Nickelodeon for girls like 5 to 12 and then MTV for, you know, 12 to 24. So the single biggest source of televised influence on these is coming from a rotten Jew.
Well, then the entire media echoes it, Alex. This live video site I mentioned, this is not a Picayune site there. It's something like 1.5 million people reach. And they featured this young girl, pretty blonde girl, saying these sorts of things to live streaming, you know, to lots of males and everything. And this is how virtually the whole broad sweep of the United States, the great numbers of masses are. This is how severely they're dumbed down. Maybe they know, you know, at Thanksgiving dinner how to comport themselves with a bare modicum of dignity with their family. But it's a people who have been beaten. They've been psychologically beaten down over many decades, and that is the state of the United States. And then people such as us who talk about it or draw attention to the facts of the matter are ipso facto by those Jewish regulations, the evil ones, you know, by those social mores, which is another layer of bizarreness that they put upon it.
Yeah, well, we have here another article about Kilpatrick. Kilpatrick, meteoric rise to falling star from of Kilpatrick's political savvy pedigree fading under weight of text scandal. So again, this is a, you know, almost an Obama parallel with Kilpatrick. The PR is beginning to fade under the weight of rampant reality.
Yeah, well, Detroit's the microcosm and the USA under abomination will be the macrocosms. So.
They say tragedies don't begin tragically. They start with hope, which was on full display at the Marriott on election night 2001 with Kwame Kilpatrick sporting a bright smile and a piercing in his ear where a diamond used to shine.
You know, there's not one black politician in America who isn't up to something like this. They're all in time revealed to be criminals, and it's always, oh, the great new black hope. You know, he's been trained in the right sociology and civic management, and he's got his master's in public policy. Well, it always, in the end, they turn out to be a nigger. I mean, just like Mugabe over in Zimbabwe, it doesn't matter how many honorary degrees they have from white institutions or real degrees, they ultimately are going to act black, and blacks are going to keep voting for them, and they'll ultimately keep on blaming whites for every problem that they have. It doesn't matter if there are any whites around or not. I mean, Mugabe in Zimbabwe, who just underwent an election right before we recorded this, dispossessed the white farmers who were feeding the country and had made the country the breadbasket of the world, resulting in hyperinflation and no food available, and then he's still blaming whites for his problems. So there really isn't any way to deal with blacks or the liberals who pretend that they're capable of living up to human standards. It's just they have to be avoided, and power has to be taken from the crazy Jews and leftists.
25 million Zimbabwe dollars over there for a tomato, Alex. I saw the note, and the niggers are holding up a sign. It says billionaires, starving billionaires. They're going to be the richest country on earth in terms of billions of dollars.
Well, if you go to Google Image and search Zimbabwe, you can find, you know, they show you a picture of a little nigglet, and he's got two, you know, a foot thick stack of bills that he's begged in the street. I mean, the money is worth nothing now. They had 100,000% inflation rate in January. I'm sure it's higher than that now.
Yeah.
So they're having that Weimar inflation we always talk about.
You know, he was the hip hop mayor greeting political blue bloods with a chest bumping embrace and telling white haired business moguls to hit him on his SkyTel page writer.
Yeah, wow. It turns out that running actual human communities is a little more difficult than appearing in some stupid rap video. But in a democracy, everything is made to appear that anyone can do it and all opinions are equal, but that's not in fact the case.
It was Obama's father. Was it Harvard or Yale he went to? I believe Harvard. And I think Obama got what intelligence he has from his mother's family. But anyway, I wonder, I mean, you know, I used to go around Harvard Square. I went to a prep school out there, and I would go into Harvard Square sometimes and dream about going there, actually. But how in the world, even if he's there on a sports scholarship, how do they pretend that these guys are making these grades in that kind of an atmosphere? It's just a total a pretension. It's like an open secret. It has to be, because there's no way he's competing with these guys in Harvard and scoring reasonably.
I'm trying to find. I believe he went to Harvard. I'm not absolutely sure about that, but I know we've talked about him before.
Well, any of these top schools, they just, I understand sports figures, that they have a big pretension and they just grade them. I mean, they must actually tell these professors, you have to pass him, give him a C or something.
They bring in, like, they specially groom minorities who are better looking or more articulate than average, and they treat them like they do congressmen. They bring them in for their special training, and sure, they can get rid of any, or, you know, abandon any standard they want if they think it's they're going to be able to produce a generation of leaders. Just like Marion Barry was originally a chemist and had some kind of training, but in the end, it doesn't matter. I mean, like I said about Mugabe, he was trained in Jesuit schools. He went to, I think, the London School of Economics, and he ended up with about 7 degrees and 3 honorary degrees. It doesn't matter, though. In the end, it doesn't change what they are or how they act.
Like Superman, and Kilpatrick often seemed larger than life. He rolled through the city in a black Escalade with what in 2002 was the largest mayoral security team in the nation.
Well, yeah, and see, they cover him as though he's a hip-hop star or in a rap video, but why don't they put it in a different context and say, you know, he is just merely the latest in a long line of black leaders that ultimately failed, and even to say ultimately, failed pretty much off the bat and straightforward. And they never put him in the correct context, and that's a sign of having a controlled media. If you didn't have a controlled media, you'd still have segregation. But the controlled media pushes segregation or pushes desegregation through forced racial mixing, and this over time you end up with these black politicians, but it can't cover them accurately because it would put the lie to segregation or being immoral and integration being moral. So they never put the failed black politician in context, which is basically all black politicians fail, and it doesn't matter because blacks vote for them because they're black. It doesn't show you that every one of these black majority cities is extremely violent and essentially bankrupt, whether it's D.C. or Detroit or Zimbabwe or East St. Louis. They all have exactly the same problems.
Or Obama's 13th ward in Chicago.
That's right. I saw Obama in Eugene, Oregon, in a video. You know, that's where Ken Kesey's wife, Nancy, made the yogurt. I guess that was some sleepy hippie town years ago, and now the children and grandchildren of those people were screaming for Obama as he entered this big auditorium, and the Secret Service contingent had, I believe it was 3 out of 6 were Negroes, so that's not in proportion to their numbers in the society, so maybe Obama's going to have the same thing. And also, he was elected where Louis Farrakhan's mansion is, and the whole Nation of Islam is based, 13th District right there. And they say that no one can be elected in that district without the muscle of Nation of Islam, even though there are theological differences, one would think, between Jeremiah Wright and Louis Farrakhan's religion. Nonetheless, on the black supremacy issue, they agree. So after Obama is the president of the United States and these things come out and he starts radically changing the amount of aid that people give, the United States people give Africa, that'll be another boondoggle. We've already seen Gates and Buffett give away their tens of billions between them to Africa. And Americans have been primed, again, by Jewish thought systems to believe that this makes them morally good and this is what they must do, should do, can do, will do. That's what matters.
Hey, Craig, I'm reading here on Wikipedia. Kilpatrick says he has a Bachelor of Science in Political Science and a teaching certificate at Florida A&M, and I believe that's a traditionally black college. And he's a JD, that means a lawyer, from the Michigan State, but has never practiced law.
Faces 8 felonies, each with maximum possible prison terms of 5 to 15 years. The Detroit City Council passed a resolution asking Kilpatrick to resign, and calls for his ouster are likely to only increase with him facing felony charges.
But Aegis, with a jury of 10 Negroes and 2 whites, or an all-black jury in Detroit, what does that mean? I mean, it's back to San Francisco's anarcho-tyranny. All of these terms and penalties are meaningless in an uneven application of law, to where potentially and very really whites who commit so-called hate crimes with an added 10-year sentence are serving far more time than someone such as this Boone.
And, quote, I look forward to a complete exoneration, end quote, he said after the charges were announced.
Yeah, that's a little redundant. That's what exoneration means. But, yeah, he this is not the first thing he's had. I mean, just looking at Wikipedia, he had had, he charged something like a couple $100,000 in food, lodging, entertainment expenses over the first couple of years of his administration. They're not making any distinction between their personal use of funds and the funds that they have as the manager of the city. And then when they get caught, they blame racism, even if there's no whites around in Detroit. The whites have pretty much fled since the riots back that we used to have Yankee Jim talk about back in the 60s, drove the whites out of Detroit, which used to be the Paris of Middle America, something like that. They had all the big car factories operating in really ornate buildings. So
still great architecture there, but it's just decrepit. So.
Well, yeah, it's all squatted or destroyed, vandalized. Right. The people aren't there.
At one time, one of the most innovative and wealthy cities in the entire United States, with Henry Ford right there, with the assembly line production, the Packard plant, all of those automobiles being built at that time, it was definitely one of the more progressive cities in the entire world, and had cash flow to match.
It is as openly and obviously as these facts are known to white nationalists, and as many times as we repeat them about Detroit, and with Detroit is crap website and so forth, still in all, we're made to be seen as the most radical tellers of untruths and unrealities that walk the face of the planet. It's unbelievable. I mean...
Frothing at the mouth haters, Jake?
Yeah, absolutely irrational. And all we're doing is speaking fact about this, and especially in places like South Africa and Detroit, where D.C., St. Louis, you name it. And the best they will do is say that's the result of centuries of oppression by whitey. I mean, that's about the best they can roll out these days, which even that isn't because that's arguable.
And the thing is, this kind of financial chicanery and corruption extends wherever black political power extends. And let me tell you, when we had the rally in Kalamazoo, I drove up from where I am in Missouri. You have to drive up, essentially use outskirts Chicago and then drive around the southern part of Lake Michigan and then up into Michigan through Indiana. And let me tell you, there's more blacks around there than I would have believed. You know how from Chicago you go over to, there's sort of Gary, that's always been a famous nigger town, and then but even around there, past there, up into Michigan, there are plenty of blacks around there on that eastern side of Lake Michigan, more than I would have thought. I would have thought that was white and rural, but it's really more racially mixed than heartland kind of white farmer types, you would have thought. So there's more and more blacks, and there'll be more and more politicians like this. And again, the key here is the problem is the problem, but the real problem is you can't deal with the problem because you can't describe it accurately like we are here. That's why we do this show, to put stuff like this in the proper context. And the proper context is blacks aren't fit for self-rule. Nowhere, at no time ever in history, have they demonstrated that they can run a simple town competently. And that's why whites require a 100% divorce from blacks politically. That's what would be in our interest. That's what would be good for whites, which is our sole concern here. You know, we don't need these people around. We certainly don't want to be bossed around by them. And now we face the prospect of a black being president. And they've got one who's a little, you know, he's half white, so he's a little more articulate than your average black, so he can plausibly represent the fiction that you see on TV of the noble Negro who's going to heal us and bring everything together with his superior spirituality and his hip-hoppiness. But the reality in the end, the same old thing, you know, they're not capable of running cities, let alone running the country. And they very much have an axe to grind. If you saw, you know, Obama's speech about race, it's the same old shakedown of whitey. Ultimately, whites have no complaints against blacks, but blacks have plenty of legitimate complaints against whites, and we better pay them or they'll riot. It doesn't matter how unthreateningly he says it. The message is exactly the same as the radical ones. We're guilty and they're innocent. We owe them, but we don't owe them.
Their hip-hoppiness at the church, though, and the Trinity Church there in Chicago, is pretty inspiring on one level. If you like that sort of comedy, I enjoy that. I like to watch that video, and I don't know if you've seen it, but they're singing, and they're singing. What's the refrain, Aegis? Do you recall what it is?
No, no, no! Not God bless America! God damn America!
Anyway, they're hopping around. They have a choir singing. They've got a conga drummer and a guy shaking a gourd.
I didn't watch it. I know the import of it. He's right about a lot of things, but of course, you know, he hates whites. But then again, he lives in a like totally white area.
Yeah, and he wears these traditional black costumes that really are only worn by crazy American blacks.
The kente cloth and the shiki or whatever.
It's about as African as Kwanzaa.
But in the height of fashion in 1968. 8 or 9.
Mary and Barry wore that stuff too. Yeah, they wear the kente cloth.
Yeah, it was a regular jig jamboree. And his great line was, God damn, and people say God bless America. I say God damn America.
No.
He's right about the Zionism, though, as Alex was alluding to. And there's a little bit of irony there, because that's one thing that might pull Obama down. But I don't even think even Zionism can stop America's nigger mania if they get on the tangent for this guy.
God damn America!
It's a sign of where they feel the power lies, that he wouldn't back off from this guy. He said, ultimately, I will, I'll stick with him. I'm not going to abandon him. That's a sign that they believe.
Well, whereas they can get whites. He's been in the church for 20 years.
Well, yeah, I know. But, I mean, whites will back off of anything. If there's any little charge of racism, they'll abandon someone immediately. Whereas here you have this nigger going off against whites, and this guy who's running for president won't even back off of him or renounce him. I mean, he'll kind of distance himself from the statements, but not really, if you read what he says. And that's a sign that they think they can basically say and get away with whatever they want.
Yeah, because being a black man in America is just so difficult. It's such a harrowing experience.
The key is they have the media on their side. You don't need anything else, really, than the media. And if you have the media and the courts on your side, you can do about whatever you want. Get away with these ridiculous double standards, because it's never reported accurately.
God damn America!
To tell you guys some more background about this guy, of course, he was born and grew up in Honolulu, and he went to Punahou, which is at the base of Tantalus Mountain, and it was a school where the Hawaiians used to send the ali'i. They were called the royalty, but anyway, they were really not royalty. They were just people the missionaries decided were educable, and anyway, he went to that school, and his grandmother was the first bank vice president in the state, although she's white. Even for her to be in that state that early and be the first woman vice president of a bank was quite early, and
now,
she lives at the corner.
Typical white woman, grandmother?
No, this is, his grandmother. His mother was off with several husbands, or a couple anyway, one that was in Indonesia, I think, but... No, she wasn't typical.
Referred to her as a typical white woman?
No, she was the thing. Her name is Madeline. What was her surname? Madeline Dunn something, I think. She wasn't typical. I mean, they said people who wrote about her, she was highly intellectual for a woman and so forth, and very iconoclastic, they said. But anyway, he lived with her a long time, and right there it's a building with big banyan trees in front of it at the corner of a Veritania in Punahou, about 3 blocks from Punahou School. And she still lives there. And I drove this guy one time, and I remembered it as soon as I saw, it jogged my brain when I saw the address where she lived. I looked it up, 411 or something. And the Chicago paper wrote about it. They named her name, and I looked it up. But because no nigger in those days, this would be, he would have been 21, I was 31, and no way that one went to Punahou. And I remember talking to the guy. We sat and talked a while. He held me in Waikiki anyway. And he was very glib and very cautious. You would say something, and he would think and look, but very fast with words. And, of course, I was 10 years older, so, I mentioned I'd gone to a prep school. And we talked about it. I said, why is it no one here will admit, I'd only been there a few years at the time, no one here will admit that they have a lot of racism in Hawaii? And he said, I said, they do have it, don't they? And he said, yes, they do, absolutely. He said, they're very racist. He just told me right off the bat, which was phenomenal, that somebody from that state born there, even though he was black, would admit that. And especially that he went to Punahou, he would admit that, because then he's in the ruling elite. Punahou and Iolani are the two top prep schools by far. Most people would say Punahou originally was the more prestigious, although Iolani became more for intellectual acumen, I think, these days. But anyway, and he was right into that subject. He liked that subject.
Who set those schools up originally?
The missionaries did, from Connecticut.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they set them up.
So what do they have? Like, mostly whites, but then they have a elite local Hawaiians, and
that's what he and I talked about, because now it's kind of morphed to where if you're a local family and you have power, they're not so many whites. They're only 33% whites there, even less nowadays. But a lot of Japanese go there, and they have a thing called William S. Richardson Law School up at UH. And UH is where Obama's father went to school, at the JFK Center right there across from the theater. He probably stayed there and banged this 18-year-old white girl from Kansas, Obama's mom. But Yeah, so now they have a lot of Japanese who go there, and there have been scandals after scandal after scandals because some of them who go to William S. Richardson, at least at the time when I was talking to Obama, that's been 25 years ago, literally spoke only pidgin English. And you would see them on the news, and they'd be flat-out lawyers, and they were beating whites into the law school, see? And you'd say, well, gee, you know, what's wrong with this picture? You know, law, you have to know quite a bit about the spoken and written words. So he just admitted that out front. He knew all about it. And I remember his name was Barry, too. I even remember because I told my friend, I said, I mean, I drove this this black named Barry. And I said, maybe his dad's Jewish or something. It's unbelievable. I mean, that would be like, it'd be like meeting a spaceman. In those days, it just did not exist in the state of Hawaii. So he grew up under anomalous conditions to the extreme degree.
So he wasn't in the 13th Ward of Chicago.
No. He went there, and he went to... And the early bios before when he got elected to the Senate, they said he got a job. He sent out resumes all over, and he got a job doing some sort of community activist work. Of course, that's what they always call it, Dan, and that's a racial organization is what that transcribes to in English language, yeah.
Communist agitation.
Right. If a white were doing community activism, it wouldn't be called pro-white work, but that's what he was doing, and he was doing it in the poor part of Chicago. Well, that's literally the south side of Chicago. I've watched Otis Moss, the new preacher for that church, and his videos are on YouTube, and he says it right there. We're in the south side of Chicago. You know the old Jim Croce song? And bad, Leroy Brown, the baddest man in the whole damn town. Badder than old King Kong and meaner than a junkyard dog. This is the fucking place, people. You got it? The fucking south side of Chicago.
So he was there 20 years after that.
Yeah, he was there 20 years listening to this shit. Nation of Islam's running the district.
In
you know,
black
like they do,
supremacism.
Yeah, they run HUD contracts all over the country, this Nation of Islam, too. You know, these big, beefy guys, I guess, who were bred by slave masters to be, you know, like big junkyard dogs is what they were done. Eugenics. And, it's a mess. This is the America. So Detroit is what the United States is going to morph into on a national scale when this guy becomes the president, no matter what they say, because clearly he has racial preference ideas and black supremacy ideas. They're just all over the place. And he just completed practically the entire run for the nomination, and the national media wouldn't touch it. They wouldn't reveal these things. You think they didn't know these things in Chicago? In the media, they knew him backwards and forwards.
So
they knew all these facts.
He was seeped in one of the most hateful black communities west of Harlem for 20 years.
Yeah,
listening
listen to this,
this Pastor Wright and Mau Mau and African this and black value system that.
Yeah, well, the antipode with that, I mean, we should be able to make Alex Linder president on that basis. I mean, you know, why not, Alex? You see what I mean?
Fair is fair.
They're really just the mirror image, in a way, of what we're saying, except, of course, they're doing a total irresponsibility, and the black race has no histories of accomplishment the way the white race does. So it's really, but in terms of favoring one's own people, they do what they do just as so-called radically as we do. And the people in the middle in that pudding mishmash are the fucked up ones, the ones like that girl in Kalamazoo there that was on the live video, and all these other kids, and all the junk media. That constantly hide these truths.
You know, Craig, that's some good history there. And there's also, I'm looking at another article here on Kilpatrick and some of the background. You know, it's not just that, and maybe you mentioned this before, it's not just this sex crime, but it's kind of the tip of the iceberg. And if they get into his text messages, they're saying that basically there was a stripper who was killed after a party at his mansion. And possibly there was even a second one that was also killed because they're saying there was someone else tracked down in Atlanta and shot with the same type of gun. And the son of one of the strippers named Green is trying to get into the text messages of Kwame that I guess came up through this allegation of him, you know, fooling around with his chief of staff. And so what does this guy say here? This is from WorldNet Daily, Black Eye, Ellis, Washington article, calling all criminals come to Detroit, March 20th, 2008. What does he say? He says he's basically comparing the way Kilpatrick operates to a gang where you have to, the final act to get into the gang is commit some kind of crime, so they hold it over you. And he's saying that's how Kilpatrick's deal is organized. It's essentially black political powers organized as a criminal gang, just like you see Mugabe has his henchmen beating up any opposition candidates, sure, torturing people. This guy says the mayor knew the political and legal heat he was under when he appointed Bully Cummings, that's a last name, police chief in November 2003. By that time, it had been over a year since his mysterious party at the Manoogian Mansion in October of 2002. So 6 years ago, the mayor, Kwame, with the earring, threw a party. A party the police chief of Southfield, Michigan was invited to, but wisely declined. A party that was investigated by Deputy Police Chief Gary Brown, Lieutenant Alvin Bowman, Harold Nelthrope. And Nelthrope's one of the ones who accused him of this latest thing. So I was trying to find if he was black or white. I don't know. But there's like three officers that are accusing Kwame right now. And barred by Bully Cummings when the investigation got too close to his honor. So, in fact, the very day Officer Brown's investigation memo regarding the mayor's Manoogian Mansion party was to become public, one of the three dancers at the party, Tamara Strawberry Green, was viciously murdered as she and her boyfriend sat in a car at the corner of Roselawn and Outer Drive, literally around the block from where the black writer grew up in the 60s to 80s. A second dancer at the party, which the mayor and Michigan Republican Attorney General Mike Cox still insist was a, quote, urban legend, was tracked down to Atlanta and reportedly killed with the same .40 caliber police-issued weapon. All this drama for a party that never happened? Like my grandmama used to tell me, boy, where there's smoke, there's fire. So that's what's actually going on in Detroit and starting to unravel a little bit. And this is in the context of a city that is bankrupt. It's entirely black. And the fantastic hip-hop mayor, Kwame Kilpatrick, has gotten rid of hundreds of, you know, veteran police officers. And he's unable to fill the vacancies because, you can't find any niggers that are qualified that aren't criminals themselves. And the greater context is you got a media that's not going to report any of this as a racial problem, which is exactly what it is. It's just blacks being blacks. The only thing whites are able to do, because they don't have any real political powers, to flee the area. And in Detroit, that means get out past 8 Mile Drive, I guess. Probably more like 15 Mile Drive at this point.
But, 8 Mile.
I thought you said the east coast of Lake Michigan or something. What was that, Alex?
Well, and even there, you know, I mean, you can go north in Michigan. I'm just pointing out that it's not just niggers in, as you said, south side of Chicago, and then a little ways to the east, Gary, Indiana, as you go around the south part of the lake, but it's even up beyond that into Michigan. And then, you know, probably in a ways. I don't even know. You'd have to see a whole map of the place. But black populations expand over time because they have so many illegitimate kids that each generation is, you know, larger than the last. So you have these black politicians talking about how bad America has been to blacks. Well, they only ever brought, I think Buchanan claimed, I've seen the claim that they brought, oh, I don't know, like 9 million blacks were brought to the Americas and maybe 3 million of them went to the U.S. But then again, I saw Buchanan claim in an article recently that only about 600,000 blacks were brought to the U.S. And out of that, they've developed 35 to 40 million people. So America hasn't been that bad to blacks.
Which makes sense, because even now, if you look at countries like Uganda, which only now are starting to reach certain levels of infrastructure and medicine, they're projected to have, I think there's something like 10 million, they're projected to have 60 million by 2008.
I'll give you an example. When I was in college 20 years ago, and I wrote about South Africa. At that point, there were about 30 million South Africans, of which I think like, you know, 5 million were white. Well, what is it today? There are like 40 million South Africans 20 years later, and 4 million of them are white. So the population of these nigger areas just goes up over time.
Yeah.
And that's purely due to the white man's medicine. Because as we see in Zimbabwe, they can't even, in Zimbabwe, the population's gone down by about 4 million. They got about 12 million people there, and, you know, 4 million of them have left, more or less, because they don't want to starve to death. So blacks can't run cities, towns, states, or countries. And most blacks exist because of white medicine and technology. But they don't thank us for it.
Well, part of that, if I could just go off a little bit about that, Alex, is it's familiar with racialists, is that they're made so uncomfortable by the sheer number of accomplishments of whites. I mean, it's not lost on them, all of these things in science, history, architecture, and everything. So they know that the comparison is there, and it must be profoundly uncomfortable. It would be like, you know, existing in a world where everyone has an IQ of 200 and 210 or something, in a way. I mean, you would be profoundly cognizant of the contrast, and that would be a constant source of angst to your, you know, psyche. So that's another reason for separation, to allow people to be who they are. That's why the blacks in Detroit seem to really enjoy it there. And the same in Atlanta, and the same Compton and the same wherever they are together.
Houston, New Orleans, Philadelphia.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm. Cape Lambert.
Else why would they stay together?
Yeah. Well, turning to the East Coast, we have Elliot Spitzer in the news, a Jew, governor of New York, of a long line of Jews in New York. But here's the story. Federal investigators have developed information that the prostitute, whom Elliot Spitzer is said to have met in Washington last month, has some relationship with a man who the authorities contend is an associate of organized crime, according to people with knowledge of the matter. It is unclear on Friday whether the investigators had determined the precise nature or timing of the relationship between a 22-year-old woman and the reputed organized crime figure, a building contractor now under federal indictment in a separate case in Brooklyn. In any case, this is just further information on this scandal involving Elliot Spitzer and his resignation.
Yeah, there's a new woman now, too, some white with big tits from somewhere, California. I guess she grew up, they said, in a trailer park, and so she went to New York City, and they have her up on $8 million. She was running a hooker ring. But Spitzer's original pimp was an Israeli. I don't know if you have his name on your monitor there, Aegis, but I've forgotten. I think he had a 21 or 22-year-old girlfriend. I think he's about 62 years old or something. And you can't help but wonder if this fellow might not have had connections to Israeli mafia. And they said that also some of the Goldman Sachs people definitely wanted Spitzer to fall. And you know, when you're in the centers of power in a place like New York State, a lot of powerful people would keep their eye on what you're doing. And so he was clearly subject to blackmail or pressure from various entities to do things. He wasn't going to quit. He said it was not. It was just, he gave some pretty comedic responses. He showed up at some school and some little niglet said, I think I'll call you, what did he say, fool. You know, a little six-year-old or something. After the scandal, I think. And fool, I mean, it's pretty funny because a clown, that was it, a clown. And it sounded like he heard his parents talking about it, you know, in front of the TV or something. Pretty funny. Kept insisting he was going to call Spitzer clown. Yeah, Spitzer quit. And, you know, his family was worth $500 million, I read. So here's a guy with a lot of power who is obsessed with more power and money and constantly double dealing. Even those hookers, I guess, there's some question they use state money to pay him at, what was it, $5,000 an hour or something. So as wealthy as he was, in fact, that was part of the deal. If he'd quit, maybe they wouldn't prosecute him. So these kind of deals, in fact, I'm getting sick of covering them on Goyfire, but what can we do? All the signs are there that it's a society in utter collapse and fall, morally at least, and economically too at this point in many respects, although there's still some strength to the institutions and some production facilities, at least in the sciences. But it's pretty dismaying to see your country after all the promise, you know, after post-World War II, where I grew up in that time period, and for it to come to this and not more people to speak truth about what's going on. It's just really dismaying.
Yeah, well, how about his replacement is a blind black man who has admitted to drug use and extramarital affair.
Yeah, he likes his cocaine. He does everything. I've been joking. I said he probably plays harmonica, too. It's unbelievable.
I mean, he's blind? I mean, come on. Could they find a black person that could actually see?
Yeah, well, these are the extremes to which Americans will go to prove that anyone can do anything and that there's virtually no difference between one human being and another. They're just the extremes of Jewish ridiculousness in the social sciences carried to the nth degree. We're not going to see any end of it. It's going to get worse, I guess. You wouldn't think so, right? But yeah.
I mean, you would think the one guy who's supposed to be the leader of an entire state, most fit individual to govern that state, is in fact a blind black. Is that what we're led to believe in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times?
I tell you, I hope we have an illegal story today, because I was just remembering in the 70s and 80s, remember all the Jewish experts and Dershowitz and these kind of people would be all over your TV saying how these Mexicans just want to come here and work. And how many whites say, that's right, they sure do, you know, she's got a good point. And on and on and on. And now finally they're waking up to that, although it's taken a great long many decades, I guess three, two of them very intense. And they seem to be able to foist these fallacies off on tens of millions of white people to their utter ruination with very little reaction until after all the damage, you know, the dike's busted. So that's why we need our own media, which is what we're doing, but to controvert that. And we seem to be making some progress on the Internet, a lot of progress. I know we are, but I mean, they've had one of these things after the other. The first one, or one of the first ones, was that women are our equals in terms of intellectual acumen and accuracy in the corporate world and so forth. And a lot of people still insist that that's so. They might have their place in pediatrics or something if they're a super genius woman.
Yeah. Well, Alex, did you manage to catch this story at all with Spitzer? What's your take on it?
I don't have too much of an opinion on it. What I noted was the libertarians were noting the irony of how he was caught. I think they're, the feds are basically spying on him through his email and whatever. So the security state that he helped to put in place and his type, Kikes, put in place, tripped him up through his personal dealings.
Yeah, we just don't need the IRS that were tipped off because he was moving money around and they thought he was bribing people or something like that, and it turned out he was.
Yeah, well, they have since they passed the Patriot Act and these other various acts that empower the executive, they've enacted ever tighter financial control so that I've said this on earlier Goyfires, if you go into a bank and try to open like a checking account or a business checking account, they will overtly ask you, are you going to be doing international money transfers, wire transfers? They will ask you about, I don't know, four or five different specific things without knowing what kind of business you're going to do or whatever. And you're like, well, why are you asking me this kind of thing? Well, we have to because of the Patriot Act.
It's the law.
Yeah, and it's already been the case for a number of years. They have to file something whenever you move more than about $10,000, but now it's even less than that. It's $9,000 or $8,000, and they're basically supposed to look for anyone who's evading it also. If you want to read about this stuff, read James Bovard. He's a columnist. He's also written a few books about this kind of thing. Essentially, it's one of the Marxist planks, which is complete financial controls on any kind of capital leaving the country. They want to know where every last penny is, and once you understand that, you can plot out what they're going to try to do. They want to know who they're Jews. They're essentially paranoid, and what form does that take? Well, it means using all available technology to track anyone who might potentially become their enemy. And so the ADL trains the cops to think about people the same way the Jews do. That is, any white male who's into privacy and living his own life is a potential threat. He's an extremist. He's a hater. You need to watch him. You need to know where all of his money is, and you need to know what he's doing at every hour of the day. So all the technology is geared to that end. Now, this happened to be a Jew caught up in their web. Somehow they figured out that he was, using prostitutes or whatever, doing some kind of malfeasance. To me, it's not particularly interesting, but, it's a typical Sopranos type stuff. The Kike attorney general is using some prostitute who has ties to the mob, and what are you going to say? We don't need to live in a country with Jews in it any more than we do need to live in one with Kilpatricks in it. Kwame Kilpatricks. If there are white and Irish, that's fine, but we don't need niggers with diamonds in their ears, and we don't need Kikes, using call girls as our attorneys general.
Yeah, well, we also have, on the economic front, analysts predict that as many as 2 million homeowners could enter foreclosure this year, caught by a slowing economy, falling house prices, and in many cases, adjustable mortgages, with rates rising from high to higher. In Las Vegas, 1.9% of homes in the Las Vegas area were in the foreclosure process in January, almost triple the rate of a year earlier, according to First American Core Logic, the Santa Ana, California Real Estate and Mortgage Data. So this is actually a story of guys who go around bribing people not to trash the house after foreclosure.
It makes sense. If they're not going to live up to their loan, why are they going to depart the premise they can't pay for? It's just most of these resolve back into some kind of a moral problem. And I guess one of the lessons here is if your house goes up in value, like it goes from $100,000 to $400,000 or $500,000, you might want to think about cashing out right then, because unfortunately the whole psychology is against it, but it doesn't go on forever. And, a house is a depreciating asset. And if you don't think that's true, you take a look at a house, one of these houses that's unoccupied, and look how fast it degrades. There's a lot of money required to go into upkeep the house. Now, like I say, a lot of these little itty bitty houses, that are worth, $50,000 or $100,000 or $200,000 through all of this easy credit made available by the Jews, like Bernanke at the Fed, and through the giant banks, their houses came to be overvalued as people got into speculation and then took giant loans against what they thought was the everlasting value or price of the thing. And now that the housing prices have gone down, they're being foreclosed, and in a rage, they're trashing the places, as the article we're talking about says. And it's so common that they have, they're used to it. They basically pay people to do what's right, which is just leave the house and not trash it.
Yeah, so
because,
light switches.
Childish Americans, they want to trash it as they leave.
Light switches switches, outlet covers, and thermostats were smashed. There was what looked to be a crowbar damage along the staircase. A large pool of paint had hardened on the living room carpet. It appeared that someone had dripped motor oil in a trail that wound its way through every carpeted room. The appliances were gone, as were most light fixtures. A cabinet door had been removed and left soaking in a full tub of water. Not a wall was left without a hole, including the pink child's room once carefully decorated with floral wallpaper.
The video on that agent said that 50% of these houses, these vacancies, are trash. So this again speaks to the moral turpitude and decline of the United States. And further, they said that in the Las Vegas area, right there in Las Vegas, not just the area, between 150 and 200 homes are sold there every day, you know, by the county or the city authority, whoever's overseeing the auction. So every day, between 150 and 200, and 95% of those, 95 out of every 100, remain unsold. And one guy who goes and offers them this money said that he paid one fellow $2,800, and the fellow said it would be in the bank's interest to pay me mm-hmm. to the max and so forth. And he said that some people have poured concrete, cement down the toilet. So this is how fucked up the country is. And these are some of the same assholes who are calling us racist and saying how terrible we are. So fuck you people who think that. You know, we're tired of dealing with you. You're some of the self-same people who are really morally, really superior. Go right to hell.
Yeah. And there, we know there's no connection between people except money under a hyper-capitalist system.
Yeah, Jewish America. That's right. That's what the Protestants are.
So, you know, they don't feel any connection to the bank. The bank's not a local bank. It's a national bank. The bank doesn't care about their credit worthiness. It's just trying to make money itself. So fuck you. Fuck you. So that's what we have, a whole cycle of fuck yous going around. Now, here,
but they're not even worried about going to jail about it. Not even worried about the
loopholes. No, they don't care.
Why? There's too many of them, I guess.
They don't care. I mean, that's it. You know, that attitude is no one feels any connection to anyone else. So fuck you. I'm going to use you for whatever I can get out of you and then abandon you. But here in two paragraphs is what went on. And this is a microcosm of the entire country and a lot of the West. All right. The owner, a 43-year-old man with two children, spoke in the condition his name not be used, says he bought the property in 93 for $140,000. 3 years ago, he had the house appraised in 2005 for $440,000. So from $140,000 to $440,000. And he took out a $207,000 home equity loan to pay off credit card bills and buy his wife a new van. His initial payments were an affordable $1,800 a month. He fell behind, however, after he went through a divorce and his landscaping business faltered just as his interest rate was rising. He worked out a payment plan with a bank. He borrowed heavily from his father, but including penalties, his monthly payments rose to $4,000, and after 2 months, he ran out of money and the bank foreclosed. So there you go.
Yeah, now, well, I remember that boom.
He could have, if I guess we can teach white people, look, if you're in a $140,000 house that suddenly is priced at $440,000, you might want to just sell that.
Instead of taking a loan.
Sell that. Don't take a fucking loan on it. You have to pay loans back. I mean, sell the house, take the $300,000 in profit, use $100,000 to pay off your bills, use $10,000 to buy a car for your wife, and fucking stick the rest in the bank. How fucking hard is it? But the psychology of it is, you know, oh, well, it went up to $440,000. Well, fuck, why? It might go up to $800,000. And if I sell it when it's $440,000, I'm going to lose that extra money. You know what they say about the stock market? Bulls make money, bears make money, pigs get slaughtered. Sometimes you just
remember
want to
that
stick
boom
in the bank.
In 93.
I'm just saying what he could have done versus what he did. Now, of course, he didn't know that the market was at the top, and he probably figured, well, it's going to keep going up forever because that's the myth that is peddled by the real estate people. And there's a great blog that discounts all this and talks about the psychology behind it at great length called Housing Panic at blogspot.com that I read sometimes. But, that's it in a nutshell. $140,000 house, I guarantee you, is probably, you know, probably wasn't even 1,500 square feet, if anything, and, you know, it goes up to 440. So what does he do? He takes a $200,000 loan on it. To me, that's just, it's a bizarre way to think about things, but evidently a lot of Americans look at stuff that way. It's funny. I actually remember my mom when I was a kid mocking some commercial on TV, and maybe even, you guys may not remember this, or maybe you will. This had to have been like 20, 30 years ago, and it's just one of these breezy commercials, and my mom was just, oh, yeah, I just wrote a check in my Equiline. line. You know, and that was the whole thing. It was people doing exactly this. I just wrote, you know, I just wrote a check, you know, I just got a gigantic mortgage based on the assessed value of my house. And my mom was just, you know, making the point, you know, it's not that fucking easy. You know, these people, it's light and easy. And then all of a sudden what happens? Well, you go through a little personal trouble and all of a sudden that ARM starts going up and you don't have the money and boom, you know, this guy couldn't keep up the charade for 2 months when he had a downturn, you know, and all of a sudden he goes from $1,800 a month to $4,000. Now I just read a check in my Equiline. You know how easy it is. That was a big national commercial, probably, I don't know, probably in the '80s.
Yeah, and it's not easy. Cruising the wreckage of the Las Vegas property market every day in his silver Cadillac Escalade, the 38-year-old Mr. Carver has developed a connoisseur's eye for pointless destruction. Speaking of a home that was left vacant, the original owner bought the house new in 2003 for $131,000. A year ago, Mr. Carver says it could have fetched $250,000.
Aegis, let's try to get some value out here to white people. The thing you want to do, you got to be careful. And if you want to speculate, I actually encourage that. But you have to check what you do against reality, and you have to be careful. The way you want to do it is you want to go against. They're saying, oh, you know, get these easy checks to get this money based on the value of your house. Well, the value of your house can go down, but you're still left holding that loan. And if you can't pay that loan, then boom, all of a sudden you have nothing. You're out of your house and you're bankrupt or whatever. And the only fun you have in life is trashing that house on the way out the door. But what you could do is sell that house if it doubles or triples in value, sell the damn thing, rent for a while, wait for the market to crash, then step back in and buy that same house again for, you know, maybe $200,000, and then you've got the exact same house or one like it, and you've got a couple $100,000 in the bank you didn't have 5 years ago. I'm sure there are plenty of smart people who did something just like that. I can tell that from reading in the housing panic blogspot.com. That's what the smart people do. The dumb ones did what this guy did, and they got in over their heads and lost it. So the fact that the value of housing goes up and down is a reflection of the Fed's dumping money out there that people are using to speculate with in real estate and in the stock market. You have to understand that what goes up can go down. The stock market doesn't go up forever. Housing doesn't go up forever. It goes up and it goes down. So don't be like these morons. Be smart. If you have something where you can make a lot of profit off it, take that profit. Stick that money somewhere. I'm not even necessarily in the bank. Get some tangible value out of it. Don't use it as the basis for taking a large loan. I mean, that's just, to me, the psychology of that is just insane. It's got to be very, very painful knowing that you're sitting there day to day and you owe $200,000 that you got at a rate that can vary. I mean, how scary is that? Why would you do that? You would only do that if you thought that the property was never going to lose the price was never going to come back down, but it always does. So be careful, be sensible.
Well, we have another story here out of Oklahoma. 100,000 illegal aliens leave Oklahoma. Law prohibits illegal aliens from getting driver's licenses and specific government benefits. It prohibits the sheltering and transport of illegal aliens, and it allows local police to enforce immigration law in the normal course of their duties. Several months later, it certainly looks like the law has been successful. The Federation for American Immigration Reform has reported that since HB 1804 was enacted, 100,000 illegal aliens have left the state of Oklahoma, either returning to the home country or to another U.S. state with more liberal laws. And this is big news.
Well, I remember they used to say, I used to watch a lot of talk television in those days with the Mexicans when they'd all be defending them. And in fact, they were the same ones who built those houses in Vegas we were just talking about that were so cheap. But anyway, they would constantly make the point, the arguers for the invasion, who were quite often Jews, disproportionately Jews, that there's no way, it's just too big a job for law enforcement that all of these people could be held accountable. There aren't enough courts, aren't enough police, aren't enough judges, and then we'd have a constantly churned up, stopped up legal system whereby nothing would get done because the sheer enormity of the problem precluded laws being affected to it. But although, but when it comes to they're stopping our freedom of speech, they can figure out ways to do that on a massive level. What you're going to, how many words you speak every day, the average person. Now, that's something they can manage that, though. They don't have any problem with that. But back two decades ago with the Mexicans, no way to handle it legally. And now we see it. It's kind of like carrying weapons, you know. They always say that they carry laws, and in every place where they affect them, crime goes down. Anyway.
Yeah, this is just perfect proof that, you know, the invasion is a political decision. And like Craig said, that's they're softening you up by claiming that, oh, it's inevitable and there's nothing that can be done about it. That's complete bullshit. There are multiple things that can be done about it. One, you post soldiers there and just shoot anyone who tries to come in. That would dry up the flow overnight. Two, you impose serious sanctions on employers. And three, you don't allow them to get any of these driver's licenses and such, and that will end the flow.
Right.
That's what they're coming to do. They're coming here to get benefits and to work on the side so that they have two revenue streams coming their way, whereas in Mexico, they don't have shit coming their way. Yeah, once you reverse the incentive, you'll end the flow, and then it would just be a matter of mopping up the ones who are already here, which in itself wouldn't be that difficult. They're easily identifiable. I mean, they're in certain areas. I mean, they're known. Like here, they're over in Milan, they're working at the processing plant. I mean, you could round them up easily, but all you'd have to do is go to the, what you got to do is go to the head of these fucking employers like Tyson and say, look, we are gonna cut you up unless this ends immediately. These are the people who are selling us out. They're not all Jews either. The Jews own the Congress, and they rewrite the laws to make it, you know, essentially a global labor market, and that forces business to have to flee, that's the result. You know, they try to take in these people and pay them less, and, you know, the negative externalities, as the economists say, are borne by ordinary Americans. They have to live around these shitskins playing their crappy music, stealing stuff, just being all around scumbags the way Mexicans are.
So it's just a clear case of political mismanagement.
Well, I mean, we also know here at Goyfire, we know about the Jewish ethnic agenda that's the other part of this that is never discussed. Some of the financial incentives of big business and of the Republicans and Democrats are discussed even in the controlled media, but the Jewish angle is never discussed. And that's the real driver behind the open borders policy. Jews want to play divide and conquer, and to do that, they need people to bring in here to play off against whites, who are otherwise 90% of the country before the immigration law was reversed under Jewish pressure in 1965. Before 65, it was 90% white and about maybe 10% black, and it was segregated, so the two communities weren't hurting one another. Well, in reality, the blacks weren't hurting the whites because they were segregated. The Jews reversed segregation, and they opened the borders to Mexico, and now 40 years later, we have a country that's only two-thirds white, and a lot of those are nominal whites, and there's another 100 million of the 300 million are out-and-out muds who are highly destructive. Many don't even speak English. They come here for our benefits and to take our jobs. And finally, we're starting to fight back a little bit through the official established process. And it's only made headway in Oklahoma, apparently, at the state level and among a handful of little towns. But there are so many activist lawyers. And again, law schools are dominated by Jews, and they have the backing of the press that's owned and edited by Jews, that they are easily able to mount fights against the few local places that go out of their way to pass laws against these illegal invaders. So that's where we stand, and we're the only ones. Goyfire is the only place you're going to hear about the Jewish ethnic angle driving our invasion policy, our immigration policy, which is that they don't like to live in a country that is a majority of whites and Christians. They hate Christians and they hate whites. They want to destroy homogenous European-American countries, whether in Europe or whether in America. And they do that in part by importing these, opening the borders to these people from the Third World. And they've let in, you know, today the Mexican population is larger than the black population. It's probably about 40 million Mexicans have come here in the last 40 years. I've cited before, and I'll cite it again. A professor said that in 1960 in America, there were more Americans like me of Swiss descent than there were of Mexican descent. You think about that. In 1960, and now 50 years later, 48 years later, I mean, Mexicans are the largest ethnic group in America, apart from Germans.
But there are more Mexicans in America than there are Swiss in Switzerland.
Oh, there's a multiple. Anyway, I'm sure. So.
There's a multiple. I mean, there are only, how many Swiss are there? Maybe 7 million or something? I mean, there's 40 million Mexicans here. Again, we were talking about population changes. When I was in school, Mexico always had a population of about, I think, 90 million. And what is it today? I believe it's 100 million. So Mexico has added 10 million Mexicans over the last 20 years, and South Africa has added 10 million niggers over the last 20 years.
And that's minus the 40 million living here.
Exactly. Exactly. How do you figure that? I mean,
Catholics down there, Alex, as Buchanan would tell you.
Well, and it's not just Mexicans. I mean, there's people from Brazil and from El Salvador who are also here in large numbers. And it's also Africans who are here in large numbers. But, yeah, that's how it's going. And we whites have no... What's good for whites? That's what concerns us here. What's good for whites is living in a white land where we have the lowest common denominator is much higher than it is when we live in a land that's mixed with these people from around the world, people of failure from the sewers of the world. Can't run a country with Nigerians. Can't run a country with Mexicans or El Salvadorans. They have nothing to do with what we do. They don't live the way we want to live Norman Rockwell-type lives. Middle class, where everybody's in the same page. They're not obsessed with money over every other value. They have decent morals. And, you know, you don't have to lock your car or your door when you go outside. Is that the kind of America we live in today? No, it isn't. It's the farthest thing from it. You have to lock your door at all times. You have to be on guard. And the only way we can get to the kind of society we want to live in is to reconstitute it on a racial basis. Race has everything to do with the kind of country one wants to live in, no matter that fact is denied by the Catholics as well as the Jewish liars and the religious nuts who say that race doesn't matter.
Speaking of religious nuts, we have a Jew in New York City by the name of Silverstein, who's looking for $4.3 billion in damages from the airlines and other companies associated with September 11th terrorist attacks, his spokesman said. Larry Silverstein, president and CEO of Silverstein Properties, has recovered $4.6 billion in insurance payments. The additional money is meant to offset the remaining cost of what was lost on September 11th. So,
pull it. Yeah. Who is this guy? Give us the background on Silverstein.
Yeah, Silverstein was the property owner or manager, or I guess the owner of the World Trade Center, and just mysteriously insured it to the hilt against terrorist attacks 6 months before a terrorist event happened.
Was it 6 months or like 6 weeks before it happened? I thought it was very close to when 911 went off. He became the owner and insured to the hilt, as you say, the World Trade Center, and has received billions in reparations for his losses and wants billions more. But he was the guy who said on film about World Trade Center building number 7 that was not hit by any airplane, we decided to go ahead and pull it. That's why that building, along with the two others, came down that day, which is pretty clear proof that the whole thing was rigged, since you can't immediately just decide to pull down a building. You have to rig it up with some stuff. But
you know, this story just seems to underline the fact of how brazen these people are. I mean, you'd think now with the whole 9/11 truth movement, which is becoming pretty obvious even in New York City, that a guy like this, even after collecting $4.6 billion, would, you know, decide to tone it down a bit. But he's going for the jugular here with an additional $12.3 billion claim.
Here's one of the ironies of that, guys, and that is that all the lawyers, again, let's go back a couple of decades. Maybe I'm older and that's why I can remember it. But, you know, he's suing the Boston Authority and the airport there, Logan Airport, where the hijackers who hit the Trade Center took off, right? So the reason that they weren't checked more carefully that was given was that the racial profiling laws, and they changed those. And if you look at the leaders who changed those, they were a constant stream of Jew lawyers on our televisions. I remember on the public broadcasting, the equivalent on TV, you know, the one with the dour fellow and his female sidekick. I can't think of the name of him now. McNeil Air Report. Yeah, first Lair quit, and then there was just McNeil. And anyway, they would have them on their racial profiling list. Are we being sensitive enough yet? Have you curbed your white racism and so forth? No, you haven't. Well, we'll change the laws then so that we don't have to check these guys at the airport just because they're dark-skinned or Muslim or whatever. So there's one of the ironies, is that the Jews led the charge on that to prevent any kind of racial or ethnic difference profiling, and that's the pretext they gave. That's the excuse that they gave. Well, we couldn't check them closer because of the laws.
Yeah, well, they never proved anything, did they, really, about who was on the planes? I mean, they didn't didn't have the names of the ones they claimed later were hijackers.
Well, that's true. And the 911 truth, yeah, a lot of those things are in still in question. But although it's still the most glaring one is the event to me is the one you just named about the three buildings falling. Some fellow just made a video and he said it's the first time in all of humankind that three steel frame buildings have fallen from fire in a controlled direct collapse that took 15 seconds. It should have taken about 45, and they all happened in the same place on the same day.
Yeah, well, so the funniest thing I've read recently, and basically every day, you know, new facts come out and things that don't add up, was they were describing how NORAD completely lost track of these planes because the terrorist allegedly turned the transponders off. And some guy said, well, gee, if the Russians had figured out that, they could have bombed Washington with impunity.
Look, just the other day, they came across some Russian plane, some MiGs or something, up around Alaska, you know? So it's complete garbage that they couldn't figure out where these planes were, and they didn't know what was going on, and they just somehow were able to get through. That's garbage. They stood down. And that's why Cheney got all mad when did the orders still stand. Of course they do. Have you heard anything different? That's what he snapped at one of his adjutants while they were waiting for the planes to hit the towers. They knew what was going on. And of course it was prepared. They prepped the buildings up. They probably sawed through the things partly and then bombed them a little bit or had an explosive go off to fully sever the steel supports. That's the thing. They had 47 steel columns in the middle of that thing, and there's no way in hell that wouldn't have survived in some way, shape, or form. But no, it all neatly came down in nice little 30-foot packages that could be immediately carted off and sold to Asia for scrap metal. So it was totally produced, planned event, just like Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, well,
but since the American people don't give a damn, even about Pearl Harbor after the fact, when it's known and demonstrated that we had all the codes and we deliberately engineered them to attack us, they don't care. So it's pretty brazen, yeah. And too much is never enough for these Jews. They always want more money and more power. You know, the guy's only got $6 billion out of the building so far, or $4 billion, whatever it is, and he wants another $8
billion. You would think at least a novelist would arise who would write fictional stories of these big kite personages getting mass assassinated in a fictional society that's a better world,
yeah,
so
you,
to speak.
But you know what, Craig? Mm. There actually is one that came out. It's not precisely about that. It's more about Jews producing these pretexts, mentioned in the column by Paul Craig Roberts. I can't think of the name of the book, but it is about, I guess, the Mossad and the insiders in the U.S. nuclear bombing an American city as a pretext to war with Iran. So
was that Des Moines, wasn't it? I think I read your
I can't remember. It might, I think it was L.A. actually was it
L.A.?
The city that they nuked in the novel, and apparently it's not a great novel. But so far has this kind of talk that we're engaged in here gone, and so common is it now to understand what's actually going on at the top of the U.S. government that it's already turned into a mainstream novel. People are already that knowledgeable, or they would say that cynical, but it's just knowledgeable. They understand how these things operate. I mean, if you know a little about the Mossad and you read about it, you read Viktor Ostrovsky's books, you see the pattern. And the World Trade Center demolitions fit the pattern exactly.
Yeah,
and this is what the Mossad does. It creates false flag operations in order to engineer certain results. And the result it wanted was getting the U.S. embroiled in Israel's defense and its wars. And that's why Netanyahu, the Israeli prime minister, was grinning and happy. And he said, oh, this is a good, well, I mean, it's not a good thing. It's terrible. But now they know exactly how we feel in Israel, you know, so we're tied to them ever more closely.
Speaking of Israel, we have a Safed chief rabbi calls on state to exact revenge against Pharaoh. Chief rabbi of Safed, Rabbi Shmuel Eliyahu, is calling on the government to carry out state-sanctioned revenge against Arabs in order to, in his words, restore Israel's deterrence. In a piece penned for this upcoming week's edition of the newsletter Eretz Israel Shelanu, Rabbi Shmuel Eliyahu wrote, quote, it's time to call the child by its name. Revenge, revenge, revenge. We mustn't forget we have to take horrible revenge for the terrorist attacks at Merkaz Harava Yeshiva, referring to the incident in which 8 students were killed earlier this month.
Yeah, well, he says, I'm not talking about individual people in particular. I'm talking about the state, Eliyahu wrote. The state has to pin them to the point where they scream enough. So as you see here, they're always against collective guilt. Well, that's what they believe in completely. He's not talking about the people who did this or inspired or whatever. He's saying whatever. He doesn't care who they take it out of. He wants a lump of flesh taken out of Palestine. They're collective actively guilty of what? Well, really, of not being Jews. That's the Jewish attitude toward all non-Jews. You are collectively guilty. And remember that this action, this killing of these eight Jewish thugs that are being misrepresented as high school students by the liars at Fox News, the professional shills and sellouts and traitors of Fox News, remember that this was preceded by the murder of 120 innocent Palestinians by Israel. So the revenge taking was coming from the Palestinians who are living in a concentration camp that suffers from blackouts and economic embargoes and Israeli tanks on every other street. So as always, complete misrepresentation by the Jews and extreme viciousness exemplified by their behavior and their actions and their mentality. You see how they think. They just hate all non-Jews. There's no other way to put it. What's an anti-Semite? It's someone who's not a Jew. And that's what they really believe. They hate all non-Jewish people. In fact, they don't regard non-Jews as people. They regard them as animals. And he wants the Israeli government to go slaughter more of the livestock.
I mean, haven't they been doing that all along? Is this
of course they have. They've been torturing the Palestinians for decades now. But we don't hear about it in American media. All we hear about is, like someone put, you know, on VNNforum.com, I mean, someone puts, well, when the eight Israelis were killed, that's on page one. But the fact that five American soldiers died that day is, you know, on page A17. So Israel's concerns are made to outweigh American concerns. It's like our whole nation is set up to just do whatever helps Israel and screw what's good for us. Well, that's what we're saying. That's why we do the show. Look at what's good for white people is what matters. And we have to identify as whites in order to fight back against these criminals who take all of our money and our arms, as we'll see later in the show.
This rabbi is the chief rabbi of Safed, which is listed in Wikipedia as one of the four holiest Hebrew cities, Jewish cities. And one of those listed of those four cities, other than Safed, is Hebron. And Hebron's in the West Bank. It's not a Jew city. The Palestinians are supposed to have it, although the Jews literally control the center of Hebron. They've just kicked Palestinians out of the center of that city in the West Bank and taken it over. And also it says here, Safed is not mentioned in the Bible, but there's rumor that it was founded by one of Noah's sons. And you'll remember Noah is the 600-and-some-year-old alcoholic in the Bible who built the ark.
You can't even profile people here in the U.S. because the Jews would take offense to that. That would be ethnic profiling. I can't discriminate against minorities. You have to yield to affirmative action and not notice when your neighborhood is being taken over by blacks. You have to be an equal opportunity employer of all things. And meanwhile, they're doing what they damn well please over there in Israel.
Yeah, we don't even know most of what they do. It simply is not reported. But a lot of what they do is destruction of property and shooting of innocent people. And you have to understand that these people are basically living in a concentration camp. I mean, it's surrounded by wire and walls, subject to blackouts, subject to tanks rolling through the street and shelling apartment buildings and knocking them down, or just smashing through walls around properties, uprooting trees, olive trees, orange trees. That's how Jews operate. They have no respect for other people because they don't believe that they're people, and they believe that they themselves are gods among animals, or gods among dogs. It's perhaps a better way of putting it. And we subsidize these clowns to the tune of billions of dollars a year and over $1 trillion since the foundation of Israel back in 1948.
Yeah.
Yet another reason to feel great about our country, America, and what it's turned into, what it's devolved into under the Jews, who place between themselves and the whites who ought to take revenge on them, class consisting of Kwame Kilpatrick and tens of millions of illegal invaders. Think about that, what we've discussed today. Yeah. Clowns like Spitzer and this Jewish rabbi are running America. This Jewish arms dealer we're going to talk about in a minute are running America. And in between them and the white people who founded the country is Kwame Kilpatrick, this incompetent, murderous nigger with a diamond stud in his ear, and, you know, hundreds of thousands of illegal invaders kicked out of one state but are free to roam the other 49 and get driver's licenses and all kinds of medical benefits. So that's America today in 2008.
Enjoy.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, well, heading to Germany, we have a story here. Prosecutors accused the head of Germany's top far-right party Tuesday of publishing a pamphlet before the 2006 World Cup that questioned whether non-white players should be on the national soccer team. Prosecutor Simona Herber said in a statement that Udo Voigt, head of the National Democratic Party, or NDD, was charged with incitement and defamation over the pamphlet. NPD spokesman Klaus Beyer and Frank Schwert, a leading member, were also charged, Herber said. Flyer showed the traditional white German jersey with the number 25 worn at the time by black defenders. member, Patrick Owomoye, they read white, not just a jersey color, for a real national team.
A little bit of Jewish Kabbalism there migrated into German law, huh? Don't like them fucking with the numbers, mystical numbers of the Negroes. How long is he facing in prison for that one? Aegis, that sounds pretty serious.
Well, they do take
a couple years.
Incitement to hatred pretty seriously. So, yeah, let's say one to 5 years.
That'll cool his heels, won't it? He'll think twice again before he puts numbers on jerseys or makes any allusion to Alex had an article linked on VNN Inform, govnn.com, the front page, and I looked at that, and it says that now in Germany they're claiming that the Jews are telepathically.
That was a satire, actually. If you read it, I just skimmed over it and saw one quote, and I thought it was real. But then when you read it, yeah, it's satire. But like good satire, it's not too far off. It's plausible.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you know, murder, rape, publishing a pamphlet. I mean, this guy's being prosecuted for publishing a pamphlet.
What?
Yeah, I mean, this is what it's come to. And yet at the same time, well, Germany is a free and democratic country, and you have freedom of press and freedom of speech, freedom of opinion. No, you don't. Can't publish a pamphlet saying there shouldn't be non-whites on your national team.
Alex, that was putting ink to paper here.
Uh-huh.
And distributing it. So this you might be underplaying the seriousness of this offense.
I mean, this is just beyond ridiculous. And this stuff is never reported in America or in Canada. I mean, right now, up in Canada, you have a battle going on over the Lemire case, where Lemire is defending against the Canadian Hate Commission, which is kind of the star chamber that does the work of the Jews and their cat's paws, like Richard Warman. And only now are they talking about free speech concerns there, because Muslims have started to bring charges against Jews under the laws Jews created to persecute whites. And so when Jews start becoming the targets of these laws they set up to harass whites, why then it becomes a free speech issue and it should be written about. And so you have the columnists who are almost all Jews themselves, like Jonathan Kay and Mark Stein, to name the two most prominent, writing about free speech. And of course, the only thing they ever mentioned besides Ezra Levant, and I forget the other Jew Mark Stein himself, who were subject to attack under these laws, is the Fleming Rose case, who's a Jew over in Denmark who published the anti-Muslim cartoons. So free speech means the Jews' right to criticize anybody. And hate speech means the Jews' right to attack anybody who criticizes him. So, as usual, the Jews are trying to have it both ways. And part of their control over a country like Germany is saying that you can't resist their policies of forcibly integrating Germany with non-whites. You can't say that your national soccer team ought to be purely German rather than have a stray Nigerian or two on it, or you get persecuted by state prosecutors, potentially thrown in jail for years, as has already happened to Ernst Zundel, Horst Mahler, Sylvia Stoltz, to name but three of the people we have at VNNforum.com. In our speech martyrs sub-forum.
Guillermo Rudolph,
quite right. All these people, you go to vnnforum.com, go to our speech martyrs sub, you'll see all the men who are in jail across Europe for things that they've said that their Jew-controlled governments don't want them saying. All while these same Jews and the media they control are insisting that these are free and democratic nations with a complete right of conscience and right to an opinion, but they in fact do not enjoy those rights. And, you know, that's why we do this show, because this needs to change, and the only way it's going to change is if whites organize around their racial identity and fight back against the Jews who are persecuting them.
Well, speaking about Jews, we have another TJB, and this title of this article is Supplier Under Scrutiny on Arms for Afghans. So since 2006, when the insurgency in Afghanistan sharply intensified, the Afghan government has been dependent on American logistics and military support in the war against Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. But to arm the Afghan forces that it hopes will lead this fight, the American military has relied since early last year on a fledgling company led by a 22-year-old man whose vice president was a licensed masseuse. Yeah, with an award last January of a federal contract worth as much as nearly $300 million, the company AEY, which operates out of an unmarked office in Miami Beach, became the main supplier of munitions to Afghanistan's army and police forces. So
you basically got a kike here who's barely 18, who's supplying defective ammunition and arms to Afghanistan under these government contracts. I mean, this is just part and parcel of Jewish corruption. It's corruption you see wherever Jews dominate politically, because that's what they are. They're essentially a criminal genetic clan, and they're going to network with each other, like Elliot Spitzer up north in New York, down to this little kike who's 20 years old or 22 years old down in Miami. It's the same corruption. He's buying old, unstable, low-quality ammunition and occasionally supplying it to the troops out in Afghanistan, or the Afghanis who are fighting with us, and making a huge boatload of money off of it all the while. And now it's finally come to the fore. I mean, if you people don't think that our government is controlled by Jews, how do you explain story after story after story in which anybody who stands athwart the Jewish agenda is being persecuted, whether in Germany, whether in Canada, or whether in the U.S., while the Jews themselves are making out like bandits? They're killing and shooting everything that moves. They're supplying defective munitions to make a bunch of money. And let me tell you, I remember seeing some movie. I wish I could recall the name. When I read the story, I thought of it. I can't recall the name, but it was a movie made by Hollywood after World War II, but probably before 1965. And it was about a goyish type doing exactly this sort of thing. He knowingly signed off on defective airplane parts, which led to American flyers getting killed in the war because he wanted to make some profit. And of course, as I recall from the movie, the goy doing this had a German surname. He was no Jew. So the Jew uses his media control to invert reality. In the Jews movie, the goy is the bad guy. But in reality, as we see from this article, the Jew is the corrupt businessman. The Jew is getting people killed by supplying them with substandard ammunition and armaments. So that's why we do this show, because no one else is going to point out to you the ethnic connection here and what's actually going on. You read it, you think, oh, okay, well, they got a bad supplier, they get rid of them, they go, no. The whole complex is controlled by Jews. They steal all of our best technology, and they either sell it to China or use it in Israel or do both. And then the crappy inferior stuff they supply to our army and our friends, our allies in Afghanistan, and make a boatload of money off of it. Or you got this other Jew selling nuclear triggers to Pakistan. I mean, our government is controlled by Jews, and this story is just one manifestation of that control. How in the world else is a 22-year-old kid going to get a government contract for $300 million to supply arms to the army? How does that happen?
You're oppressing this poor fellow, Alex, this poor Jewish 22-year-old arms dealer with only a third of $1 billion, and you send... Maybe you're jealous, Alex. Huh? Is that it? That's what the Jews would have us believe.
Well, I don't see how someone that old can have the experience or connections to come up with what our army needs. It just doesn't make any kind of sense whatsoever.
No, he'd been at it for four years. He incorporated, they said. That company was floating along, lumbering along a little bit. His dad had it. And by the way, when his dad opened the door for reporters and a video report, and he's wearing his yarmulke. And this kid, he owned it for a while, 1% of the company. Then he literally incorporated it a month after he won the federal contract. And his one friend was a masseur. The other guy was a general manager, Levi something, Meyer, I think. He said he's going to walk away from it. Now, he said, I'm finished with that. And then the Jew Henry Waxman, I have the PDF and I'm reading it. The Jew Henry Waxman in the Congress has written him this real formal letter. Mr. Meyer, I believe his name is Levi Meyer. You are commanded to appear and so forth and so on. It looks, I don't think he uses the word commanded, but all filled with officiousness. Bring all the records that you have. We want to know the details of your business. And meanwhile, these kids are probably sitting around smoking pot, talking Ebonics almost, really.
These are fucking Pike operators, Craig. DC is full of them. I mean, I saw people, who worked at my company, and then they would go and they would work the Washington Times, or they work at the for Israeli defense contractors. They're all fucking network. That's what you suckers
out of the country. They're literally living white people's lives for us.
What you white people living in the middle of the country don't grasp is that the country is run by a tight network of kikes operating on the East Coast, essentially, and also on the West Coast. They all know each other. They're integrated. They employ each other. They're nepotistic, and they operate this country to their advantage. And then they run shit on TV that you buy like suckers. Oh, slap a bumper sticker in your car. I support the troops. Send your kid abroad to die for Israel while these fuckers are sitting there getting blowjobs and getting massages and selling crap ammunition to make boatloads of money. That's what's actually going on. It's not run in your interest, this country. It's run in the interest of Jews. And that has to be changed. I guess I really should need to say that. But the Jews have to be thrown out for any kind of sanity to be even possible. Any kind of control controlled government, you know, self-controlled government to be possible, you have to get rid of the Jews and the minorities. There's no way around it. You're never going to have any black hope that's actually going to pan out. They're all going to turn out to be crooks and murderers and liars. So
this ammunition, by the way, it came from Albania. It was Chinese ammunition manufactured between 1962 and 1974.
Can you imagine this crap that's 40 years old and been shipped all the way around the world and been sitting in warehouses for decades, and this fucking little kike. And you can believe he's a completely arrogant little kike. I can just see this little fucker. I mean, he probably goes out to the clubs every night. He's an arrogant little fuck. He's selling this ammunition he knows to be utter shit and making a boatload of money off it. You know, Golden Medina, America is the best place on earth for the Jews. You know, this is how these people are.
Yeah, here it says, Miami Beach, even before the suspension, AEY had lost staff members. Michael DiVaroli, the company's founder, told a reporter that he no longer had any relationship with the company. Mr. Pakutz, who was AEY's vice president, and Levy Meyer, 25, who was briefly listed as general manager, had left the company too.
Left the company. They're writing it up as if it really exists or that there was really something going on. It's all just like, it's like bordering on a Ponzi. They were just it was a company in Cyprus called Evden, and there was a Swiss behind that. But the point is their Jewish network, as Alex said, is all Jewish network. It's just like a big shell game.
It's just a bunch of bullshit. I mean, it's, you know, this kike, okay, hey, I'm an arms dealer. You know, you give me a $300 million contract. Okay, put the money into this account. Once the money's in there, then I spend $2 million buying this shit ammo, and I ship it to you. And all of a sudden, you know, I've got $298 million, and you've got a bunch of crappy ammo, and I'm happy. That's all it is. They're not doing any fucking thing with it.
Yeah, how long is this Jew going to get into jail, too? Or get into jail? About 18 months? 12 suspensions? Because he was such a member of the community until this happened?
You got to put all this together. Remember Karen Kwiatkowski, the libertarian, writing about, you know, these phalanxes of kikes coming through her under office in the Pentagon. Well, who do you think those people know? They know guys like this. They know how to set up their own people to make huge profits. And they know how to misrepresent it through Hollywood, what's actually going on, and through the media. And they know how to make, you know, this story no longer exists at Fox News when it's about Israelis wiretapping all these American officials so that they always know what's going on. We saw that in the case it was used to trip up Spitzer, in fact. Although, note, they tripped up Spitzer on something personal so that it's not something that's going to ramify through the wider community, you know, always using a prostitute. But they can use that same control over telephones and money and media to take down anybody. They find out your secrets. They track you. Find out where your money's going, who you're talking to, where you're browsing on the web, and use that to blackmail you or take you down and use it to cover up information about their own shenanigans, like this little punk kid who's, you know, making these hundreds of millions of dollars dealing this defective ammunition.
Check this. A couple of years before this happened, he and one of his partners there beat up a parking lot attendant so severely he was charged with a felony, and he went into court and said how he was a well-known, he's working hard for the government to stop terrorism. This is what he told the judge and so forth. Can you imagine some judge watching some snot-nosed little know-it-all kid doing this? It's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the kind of kid you see out in the South Beach MTV Beach Party with the niggers hip-hop. He was just the fucking same, and then his dad said he was a genius. And talk about huge profits, Alex. This is anti-reality, and the anti-reality is so far ingrained and so pandemic in the United States that, I said it before, it makes the Weimar Republic look like a right-wing government.
Who gives a $300 million contract to this fucking little punk kid? All right, that's where the story is. We had 10 bids and we gave it to this little punk kike kid down in Miami.
And check this, they're still accepting shipments from him even after all this until, I don't know, I think it's something like 30 or 60 days hence, until they solve the problem. And they're going to have Henry Waxman, and this dude's going to go up there, Henry Waxman, he'll probably wear a nice suit, this young kike will. And for a while he couldn't find him. I'm not sure if they've even still found him. But anyway, Levi Meyer got summoned. And it's just unbelievable. While our kids can't even get a fucking job in the 7-Eleven, you know? Somebody needs to get shot in the head. A whole bunch of them. It's really, really wrong.
Well, that's the only thing they
allow them
respect,
to do. Bear Stearns, the Cayman Islands, a registration, the fucking Cayman Islands with some nigger judge. This is where that goddamn thing is chartered. What is wrong with the people in the United States?
And what we're also going to see is that's where all these financial firms that have sold these suckers all this bad paper are going to liquidate in the Cayman Islands and declare bankruptcy and protect most of their assets and let the investors go hang.
Yeah, that's this next article here. Bear Stearns, Cayman's filing may hurt fund's creditors. Bear Stearns' decision to liquidate two bankrupt hedge funds in the Cayman Islands instead of New York may limit creditors and investors' ability to get their money back.
All this shit, Aegis. It sounds like they're fucking reading from the Onion website or something, man. It doesn't even make sense.
Yeah, and who was it? Somebody with Bear Stearns just dumped he sold $60 million worth of something to cash out. That's what they're going to do. The higher end people in this are never going to suffer in the slightest. They're going to preserve 90% of their wealth, and their investors are going to lose 90% of their wealth, if not 100. So when you get involved with the stock market, as one of our guys say, it's a kite casino, and they're the house, and you often enough are the sucker. Or if you're not the sucker, you're not the sucker because you were extremely careful about how you played and you got out when you were ahead. But all these stories perfectly feed into one another to give you a complete picture, and hopefully we're helping in that regard. But my God, they almost tell the story themselves. But if you see it, it's Jews running the country, and these are just different manifestations of the corruption and the crazy politics that you're going to get whenever you have Jews in control of something. They're running it to pursue their own agenda and for their own interests, and their interests are diametrically opposed to our interests as normal white people.
Yeah, filing the fund's bankruptcy in the Caymans, a banking center, quote, is a nice little stunt, and it may work for a while, Grant said. Quote, Bear Stearns is trying to put a wall between themselves and the so-called rogue funds.
I believe they were even chartered there, Aegis. I may be wrong, but I think that they were literally chartered there. So all their paper somewhere would have had to declare that from the get-go. Right there, a big high-rise and everything in the middle of New York City, and all running the thing out of it. It's as if they were planning for a rainy day.
Well, I think, Craig, doesn't that article say that most of these hedge funds or investment funds are belong to companies that are headquartered in these islands because they have a... It's not necessarily, it's partly because of a day like this might come, and it's also because they have more privacy and more freedom in the islands than they do in the U.S., certainly, and definitely better tax situations. But I know the U.S. has been, the U.S. regulators have been trying to get a better hold on a lot of these islands where they have different rules in the U.S. because they don't, like I said, we were talking about, that's one of the planks of Marxism is capital controls and not allowing money to leave the country without their approval. And the U.S. regulators want to know where every dollar is. And, of course, industry is going to try to protect itself for fair or for foul. And so, yeah, come the rainy day, they can liquidate under judges who aren't going to go after the heads of these hedge funds. They're going to let them, keep a lot of their assets and just fuck their investors.
We have a video on Pod Blanc, and it's by this guy Rogers, who's a big, well-respected white man who's a investor-type fellow. And he says that the federal government knew all about Bear Stearns way back during the last quarter of 07, and that all these guys are driving, 200,000 Maseratis in there. And when I say all of them, I mean all of them. That's literally, if not a Maserati, this is what they did. They gave away $43 billion in bonuses, billion, not million, in December. And that's literally what they're doing. And the federal government didn't want to take it away from them. Why? Because they're making special dispensation because they're Jews. Goldman Sachs and Bear Stearns, and they just give them all the cushy deal, just like they all got the cushy deal from the guy who stuffed the documents down his pants and got away. The NSA guy, who was he?
Sandy Berger?
Yeah, Berger, and then just one after the other. You name it. They can talk about us as anti-Semites or whatever they want, but these kind of things. This $300 million kid, it really gets to me because imagine a federal government that would hand that kind of money. They're just literally throwing it away. I mean, and on a flim flam. The federal government is literally complicit, and they act as if these journalists, they can't find the guy who gave this kid the contract. The awarders of the contract should be ferreted out within like 24 hours. They can backtrack that. They won't do it. They will not do it. And the journalists write it up as if, oh, my, he was really in business and quite a success, by the way, as was Bear Stearns.
It's like that MTV video editing style of just boom, 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 boom has gone general in the media to the press as well, because you don't get the context of anything, so that you never develop a true true understanding. And it plays into what Hitler says is the point of reading is to clarify and flesh out your picture of the world so that you can put every piece of information in your head into a sort of a pattern and see. And as you read with a specific mission of clarifying and expanding that picture. But you can't do that with the Jewish media in itself, or it makes it more difficult to do it because they don't put their articles into any kind of interpretative context. It's just, you know, this happened and this happened and this, and you're never allowed to see the connections between them.
Right. This is today's news, the news top of the hour.
Yeah, it's just a never-ending cavalcade of personality. And you know, I think they use the word epiphenomenon, you know, the just little burst, like little ripples on top of a pond that go away immediately. There's never any deeper meaning to it. That's what we're trying to give you here at Joyfire.
How did such a successful businessman go bad? How could a boy genius like that? Why did he abuse the wonderful creation he'd made?
Yeah.
You know, I hope some Iraq veterans come back, some whites, and change things. A few IEDs. Not more than a few thousand of them.
Yeah, there's nothing like having to defend yourself against a couple of mujahideen and your weapon misfires because, or jams, because you got Albanian ammo in your clip.
And not Albanian ammo from, like, you know, 2000. It's like from 1962 or something.
Yeah.
I mean, think about that.
I saw the picture. Some of it literally had mold on it. Rust and mold and corrosion.
I mean, Albania has never been noted for the high quality of its manufactured goods. I'm not sure Albanians manufacture anything.
Yeah, it was
really.
Chinese.
Yeah, old Chinese.
So they got it from the Chi-Coms 40, 50 years ago.
And the 120, the masseur, I want to tell everybody, the masseur, don't worry about the kike masseur. They're all three kikes because he's now a songwriter on MySpace. How about that? You know, maybe we're going to watch him on American Idol next, you fucking idiots.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, well, Shane, we wouldn't want such talent to go to waste, would we?
That's right.
We're talking about America here.
I want to see Henry Waxman and Levi Meyer. That'll be hilarious. Mr. Meyer, you have quite a resume here. And it's not often that we see a young man impressed, but I would just like to know how you went wrong with all the great things that you'd accomplished down there at the massage table. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, in any case, I do believe we are through the topics. Any closing statements or anything going on at the end?
Let Chain go first. Let me think for a second. If you have something to say, Chain.
Well, he just told me this, and he keeps track of it, but Goyfar has gotten 240,000 hits a year. So before the year's out, I bet it's up over 300,000. And they say viral media is 1,100,000, I think I've heard. So we're getting out there.
You know, is that from trackinggoyfar.com or?
Feedburner, I do believe. Isn't that right, Aegis?
Yeah, the down.
Oh, okay.
Downloads or click through.
Well, we encourage people, send us an email if you want. You can send it to me at alinder@kvmo.net or what do we have? info@goyfire.com, Stan Sikorsky?
Yeah, info@goyfire.com. I believe that's still working.
We've got a way to track some of our radio. I've just gotten into that recently, kind of wondering about how people are. We don't like to speak just we want to know that people are listening to it. So let us know from time to time, and we'll try to record these more often than we have in the last few months. But VNN's just going forward. I'm going to develop a few more. I've developed a lot of archive threads, and I'm going to do more on that front in terms of Craig. Actually, the thread that you and I had built on the law schools, I'm going to rebuild that and restore
a little
that.
Research. I can send it over from Bob Block or something for him.
Okay. We did it. Well, maybe we can mutually dual post it somehow. But okay. We know how we did it the first time. We just simply went out and found the top 10 law schools, and then we went and we posted links and pictures of, you know, representative lawyers and just showed, you know, estimated the percentage of Jews as law professors at the top 10 schools. And it's very easy to demonstrate that Jews are essentially half of the Ivy League law professors. And that's conservatively. That's not knowing which ones are married to Jews, but that's just taking the most obvious Jew names out of it. Anyway, that's something I'm going to work on. And we got a bunch of other stuff. We're working on a newspaper also.
Radio Espina. That's been
I'm going to be doing that tomorrow. And they're individually numbered and handcrafted. So, yeah.
We do have a feed, a live feed, I think, up, or there is a live feed up on podblanc.com. with Radio Estina up there. So it's a great show. I you really go into your professorial depth, so you can really.
Well, I try to. I think there's a lack of, you know, Aryan State University education, and just we go into it some on this show. We talk. We try to give you the fuller context. Well, that's more overtly just lecturing out of, you know, different books by the wisest people out there, and trying to figure out, you know, what's actually going on in this world, and it's stuff you will not get in any university, that's for sure. So there's a crying need for all that education that you can possibly come up with. And part of it is like what Shane has put together, and you guys have done at podblank.com, putting together existing material like videos of the first Americans, and this has to be used to reteach people the truth about their origins. We say that we need to come together as whites. Well, what's the background on that? Who are we? Where did we come from? Well, all of that stuff, bits and pieces of it are here and there around the internet, but it's not really put together by anybody. And that's what, you know, you guys have done with various videos of the first Americans, and I've got that archived at VNN, and there needs to be a lot more of that across the whole range of our history. So,
but we have to dissuade people from their Jewish Slavishness that you know, there's no such thing as the white race. There's a whole generation of kids who if they don't believe it, I can't believe they believe it, but apparently some of them do. At least they espouse it. I mean, that's a pretty serious mind bender.
But even now, 8% of the world population, they won't believe it.
Yeah, and 74% of the U.S. believes racism is a sin. First of all, what's a sin? You know what? If you don't think that if you can get past the idea that there's not a supernatural deity, that means that you have this brief time here, and whatever you flesh out here is what you get. And the way you're going to propel yourselves forward is through DNA, and that's the connectivity. You're the living connectivity between the past of that DNA and the future. And all of these things about context, Alex, you said, we don't have context. I mean, these kids can't string together three or four sentences or paragraphs.
Well, you know, and we have the government actively, the government that's given these contracts to these stupid child kikes, you know, these child prodigy kikes, is at the same time covering up our past, not just dumping thousands of tons of rock and soil on our ancestor, the Kennewick man. But I found another thing from, like, last year. The Clovis Point, which was created by our ancestors in Iberia, and they brought the technology over here to America before the red man ever came to the Americas. Well, they found a Clovis Point in Malibu, California, which is as far west as you can go. And they found it like last year, and unfortunately the land is owned by a homeowner who's only allowed a limited amount and only been forced by the state to allow a limited amount of excavation, so there could be more stuff there, but I haven't seen any updates on the story. But there's lots of exciting stuff like that going on, where the truth about the origins of and the peopling of the Americas is slowly coming to light. And what we're doing out there at PodBlank and VNN Forum is putting this information together and giving you, letting you see not only the corruption of academic anthropology, but the way that all of this fits a pattern of lies to deceive you about who you are and who you come from, and deceive you about your line of people and its meaning, and really deprive your life of the full meaning of it, and reduce you to a moment-by-moment consumer of personality and pop politics. We have something better than that, and that's why we do this show and why we do these different websites, and we encourage you to join us and help us in whatever form that is, as always.
Right, and Shane, you're now doing, what is it, two times a daily, a video, live video broadcast, is that correct?
Well, I'm going to start tomorrow afternoon to do it twice, try to reach European people. And
excellent.
Yeah, well, you know, the streaming, I guess it hits people visually, but Europeans know a lot of these things because they're not deracinated from their own cultures, at least in these smaller countries, Belarus and here. And these Slavic people, and some of them in this country, Estonia, they're sort of leading the way. And they're not, you know what, it's so refreshing to hear them talk about our people, and they don't have any apologies. I mean, it's just that I can barely relate the context to you accurately, because it's so different from the United States, where they're utterly ashamed even to have a conversation about anything white. Literally, the people will not do it in many cases. So, you know, it's just a big difference, and media is the only way to give them any kind of context. And unfortunately, the bigger voice, the bigger megaphone is who people are still believing. They will not believe evidence, and they also believe power. And the power is so corrupt now that the money's going down. The money's been ruined. I don't know what it's going to take. Are you going to, your last dime, your daughters, let your daughters get raped? What's it going to take, people, before you make some action? I don't know. But you know, you're, and I don't include us, I really don't, but I think you're a real pitiable, not even pitiable, disdain for, what's the word? I mean, I have almost disdain for you, and people in the UK too, to think that, and those are my ancestors, a lot of them, to think that they let them come to this, and even some of the Germans who've done it. There's no excuse. There's something in our genetic makeup that needs to be addressed, because...
And that is the ability to have guilt inculcated in us to a remarkable extent. Yeah. I mean, I was reading over, I showed you some of the, they're having a big conference the next few days, like April 1 to 5, on white privilege. And this is the 9th annual Congress, and it's a bunch of leftist activists and pseudo-academics from around the country convening to discuss so-called white privilege and talk about ways of dismantling systems of oppression and white privilege and white supremacy and oppressive structures. And it's a bunch of, you know, workshops and basically a bunch of whining women and some men. But
oh, yeah, the videos are up. You can watch it in all of its glory. They
actually call them white supremacist consciousness or something, and then they tell you not to be confused with white supremacism pure, or, you know, simple white supremacism.
The point is here, the whites have, what they found is, like, you know, a hostile computer seeking a port on a foreign computer to get in and mess up its system, and that's what they found in whites, is that they have this capacity to be fair, or to look at things from a different point of view, whereas all the other races just look at what's good for us. Fuck them. What's good for us? Whites need to get more like that to protect themselves. They have to intellectually understand, use their superior IQ to understand
firewall.
What's going on, to fight back. Good way to put it.
Yeah.
We need an ethnic firewall and say, look, that's why we identify. It's not just some 22-year-old kid. He's a fucking kike. You know, it's not just this rabbi. He's a fucking kike. He's saying revenge. Well, where does that come from? Well, they don't believe non-Jews are humans. You have to understand these ethnic battles going on, and you'll never get that from the media and from a brainwashed public who's been trained that to be white is to be guilty or not to exist at all in any positive sense. And they actually have a whole pseudo-academic discipline devoted to inculcating guilt in white people, white women in particular.
And also, under the right circumstances, if you were unwilling to kill someone because you're somehow... have a superstition that you're going to suffer some eternal damnation because of it. This is a weakness, too.
You're a sinner or you're immoral if you generalize based on behavior that you observe in the world. It's never immoral to use your brain to figure things out. And yet that's what these whites have been trained. I read this stuff pretty extensively last night. And, you know, the woman is, I learned that I shouldn't immediately shut down my feelings. Like, she would have an inadvertent natural reaction to, say, nigger behavior. And being a good white woman, she was trained to shut it down. So they're trying to reteach her to, no, you shouldn't just shut down your racist feeling. You should take it out and use it as a chance to learn. But not learn the obvious thing, like, yeah, you're right. You are correctly seeing what's going on and responding to it. But to unlearn your racism and linger on it and reinterpret it correctly in line with their orthodoxy.
Right. And another technique I was working on the film that was up on PaulBlanc.com was they started with a confession. Of a white woman said, you know, I did think about it, and at the end of the day, if I had a choice, I would choose to be white. And so they took this natural, honest inclination of hers and turned it into a bad thing. As if
she didn't lose all her marbles then.
Yeah, it was this self-admission that she was a racist, and therefore she all of a sudden understood what it meant to be underprivileged. So they take the natural and pervert it into their own communist manifesto, and I recommend all viewers or listeners check this film out, because it is just so disturbing. And they have that one Harvard professor up there, this black mulatto guy. He comes across like a psychopath. He is just a complete nut. Tim Wise is up there, a bunch of anti-racist people.
That's the guy who cannot pronounce the word privilege. He says privilege.
Just a real coterie of psychotic personalities lecturing and hectoring whites who were probably forced to be there. In the first place.
No, the thing is, they've got all their political work is masqueraded as academic work, so it's funded by the state because all these people are hired as, you know, professors of sociology or whatever. So they live a good, you know, middle class life while they carry on their radical subversion while whining about privilege, which is the ultimate joke, you know?
Yeah, they're the privilege.
Did you see that picture? You guys saw the picture on Vogue magazine with the basketball player, and he looked like King Kong, and he has that Giselle, that Brazilian, she's a white, the model. Anyway, Annie Leibovitz took that picture. And, of course, she's a Jewess, artificially inseminated the age of 52, she gave birth. Wouldn't ever say who the father was. Lived in the same building and was constantly photographed with Susan Sontag, real name Susan Rosenblatt. And so they were two dykes. And made a lot of photos there and got in with Jan Winter at 20 years old, or 19, I guess she became a photographer for Rolling Stone. And a very homely Jewess. And there she is, fast track. And the Queen told her off, I guess, at one point recently in a photo shoot. But I mean, and there she is taking the race mixing photo and making a big thing of it on Vogue, you see? I mean,
mm-hmm. Yeah, the gorilla and the white damsel.
Yeah, that's right. And if people think we're making captiousness out of it or something, or somehow being having some sort of, what do they call it, medicalization of dissent, like the Soviet Jews called it, medicalization of dissent. That's what we are. Crazy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we cite case after case after case, and then people say, oh, it's anecdotal. Could be white, too. So all these people who don't think like that, I hope I live long enough to see the day when some of them just get murdered, when they say, you know what, we're in a war now. We're in a civil war. You either get with the program or you know what, it's, whoever's got the more armaments is going to pop you. And if there's civil disorder in the United States, that's what happens to societies. It didn't happen in the Soviet Union, but the Soviet Unions, I think those people had their heads screwed on better because of long-term scientific and civic education. But these kids in the United States, the ones 30 and below in general, they're cooked puppies. They cannot reason, by and large.
They've been taught that reasoning is immoral. They've reached the conclusion that any kind of generalization is evil, just like they think racism is a sin. I mean, racism is a generalization from behavior, and they've been taught to disregard all generalizations.
Yeah, well, Jane, tell them where they can deprogram.
Oh, yeah, I have this program. It's called Deprogram. It's not Ebonics for all you Wiggers out there. It's Deprogram. That's what we want to do. And I got the idea from Aegis, actually, because he was running a live magazine on Mogulus, a live magazine of videos, you know, like a weapon magazine. I call it a magazine. And they had a big effect, like the one about the two-part one about the Israeli Supreme Court and all the Kabbalistic symbols there and all the hate symbols they have. Like the pyramid on the back of your dollar bill and all those things. It's right there on the roof. Ley lines, which are sort of witchy lines, you know. Magical this, magical that.
So this is a live
tall
video
tales.
Show called Deprogram.
Yeah, that's right. I talk on live. I think I'm probably a little more calmer than I have been here this evening. I hope so.
And so when is it on? What times are you live streaming?
That's 5 a.m. Tallinn. I'm in Tallinn, Estonia. It's 11 p.m. on the East Coast, 10 Central, 9 Mountain, and 8 Cali Kosovo time.
Okay, but mm-hmm. It does change, so I guess people have to tune in to podlomp.com to find out the new times. But you are live streaming daily, that is correct.
Yeah, it's streaming every day, and I just go up there and talk about news and everything. It's kind of like what Alex is doing on the radio, except I'm not as good as Alex, but I have to do it because I'm old, and you know what? I lived in a different
America.
I'm not
doing it daily. Yeah, daily is a real commitment. It's good stuff, and God knows it's needed.
Because I've seen over here these beautiful people, and it was how I remember the United States when I was young, I mean, my family and my cousins, and that's how it is here. And there's no reason it can't be like that again, but we have to redraw boundaries, and first we have to convince our people that we are a people, real basic stuff. It's like teaching fucking remedial kindergarten to you people. And I'm not talking about the white nationalists who are listening.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Well, this is exciting. Well,
we're a people. We're a people on the planet, and we're under the gun, and our numbers are dwindling. We're not replacing ourselves with a birth rate any place, no place. And we're not the source of the world's ills, just the opposite, actually, I would say.
Mm, yeah.
And 8% of the world and plummeting.